Mark, thanks for making the time. I really appreciate the opportunity here. First thing I want to ask you about first is 600 wins, because obviously that's a pretty special milestone in this league. You're one of just six head coaches to have done it in the WHL. I know it's been a little over a week now. Have you taken a little bit of time to kind of reflect on hitting that milestone?
Not really. I got some nice notes and people reaching out, but honestly, it was kind of like 500. I had no clue. You know, I was surprised when I went into Lethbridge with my team in PA, and they kind of surprised me, and same thing happened in Prince George. Ari came in, so there was something going on in the room, so I ran in there, and then there they were. And to me, that's the most special times, is something that just is impromptu like that, and the players care enough to give me the puck and then throw the Gatorade over me. That was really cool. And then we got a great picture and took him to Dairy Queen the next day. So it was a lot of fun to spend it with them. And those are the people that really matter.
Did you get reimbursed for the dry cleaning yet?
No, I didn't. So I got to work on that. So it was well worth it. I loved it. It was awesome.
Take us back all the way back to win one. Whatever it was, 19 seasons ago. What stands out from your first WHL win? You remember that?
No clue. That would have been in Kamloops, I guess, way back when, and kind of takes you back because I'm coaching against Landon DuPont, against Everett. Well, my first year, I'm coaching with Mickey DuPont, and that's his dad. So yeah. Just proves one thing, I'm old.
But you've had a great run in the WHL and certainly a lot of great memories over the years. It really is kind of a privilege to be part of this league just in general, though, and to be around the WHL.
Well, it is. It's a great league. You know, it's very professionally run, and like anything, it's for everybody, not just the players or the coaches or the staff, but it's a privilege. I mean, you know, I've really never worked a day in my life. I've played for 14 years, and then right after I got into coaching, and so they say that if you love what you do, you never worked a day in your life. So, you know, obviously I've done other things but outside of the game, but I haven't worked a day in my life. I've loved every day.
And obviously you were away from the WHL for the last couple of years before coming to Red Deer, and it's certainly been an eventful season so far here with the Rebels, but have you enjoyed it overall?
Yeah, it's good. It's been fun. We're building, and, you know, Brent kind of flipped the roster at the deadline, so in a lot of ways we've had, you know, you're moving along with a group, and then you change a lot of the group, and a lot of the group is younger, so then you have to kind of go back and go over some things that, you know, you kind of went over, but it's good. It's a good young group, lots of energy, and the bus rides, people talk about the bus rides, but I mean, if that's the worst thing, I'm doing okay. So there's a lot of people that would change positions with me, and I'm fortunate to be doing what I'm doing.
And it's clear that you still have the fire, because you talk all the time about not just being here to play games and get participation ribbons and that stuff. You're here to help this club win games and get back to championship status.
Well, for sure. And I think that was a big draw for me is you know, if anybody knows anything about Brent, he's not about participation, and it's all about winning. And I enjoy doing that too, but it does, it takes a process. You just can't come in and change the forecheck and expect to win. And, you know, the culture with the Rebels has been good forever, and, you know, we're just trying to do some things inside the room to get the guys going in the same direction and develop these young guys and make sure that they're playing as a group, because in my past, you realize that when the group wins, the individuals succeed. And all these young guys are, you know, they all want to play in the NHL, but sometimes they think that, you know, by them doing their own thing, that that's the road to success, and really it isn't. And based on experience, it's the team success, and then people look at why that team was successful, and it always goes to, well, it's, you know, they got good players, so, and then the players gain from there. So those are the types of things that take time, but, you know, we have a good young group here, and they're learning lots, and I'm just trying to help them, but at the same time, they're teaching me lots too.
Chatting with Red Deer Rebels head coach Mark Habscheid. Mark, the Winter Olympics are just getting underway here in Italy as we speak. Team Canada has yet to play a game in the men's tournament, but obviously this is pretty close to your heart because you were part of the men's Olympic team back in 1988 at the Games in Calgary, which everyone who grew up in Alberta at the time has fond memories of. Take us back. How did you end up joining the team at that time? Because you were already well into your WHL career, and then you're playing for the national team.
Well, I'd played for the Oilers for off and on for 4 years, and then I got traded to Minnesota. And I was on a termination contract, which isn't the best contract in the league. But because I had bounced around and played too much, my game wasn't as good as it should have been. And Minnesota was, they put me on waivers, and a team in the NHL picked me up. And but because of the way my contract was set up, if I recall correctly, I had the choice. I could have went to that NHL team, or I could have just done whatever and leave my contract. And you know, it was probably the best decision I made. You know, you put the ego aside to play in the NHL, and I did that, and I went to play for 16 months with an old coach of mine, Dave King, and it was the best thing I did because my game had fractured. It wasn't as good as it should have been. But, you know, your ego could have got in the way and said, well, I'm going to stay in the NHL. And I thought it was better for my career that I take a step back and get my game back to where it was. And I did that. But it was a little bit tough because the day before I'm playing with the North Stars, and we're playing in the Philadelphia Spectrum instead of in front of 17,000 people. And then I think 4 days later, I'm playing in Trail BC against the Soviet B team. And so, you know, you have to have confidence, but, you know, your pride has to be put aside. And I did that, and I was happy to do that. And Dave he still remains a very close friend of mine, helped me get my game back. And I was surrounded by just a tremendous group of teammates that, you know, we were all kind of in the situation that none of us were good enough to play in the NHL. And this was a great opportunity, a very unique opportunity, and I was really excited and honored looking back to be a part of that group.
We'll ask more about the other guys in that roster in a moment, but tell us a little bit more about playing for Dave King. You've cited him a lot, and you mentioned him just a moment ago there, still a close friend of yours. One of the pillars of Hockey Canada that helped get it to where it's at now. What was the experience like playing for him?
Well, he's kind of the godfather, and he's in the background, and he's not a self-promoter or anything like that, but the number of people and coaches that he's helped throughout the years has been astonishing. And I will say this, for him to not be in the Hockey Hall of Fame is a travesty. He's done so much for the game, and looking back at what he was teaching us back in 86, 87, 88, I mean, he was light years ahead of everybody, and he kind of had the foundation for a lot of coaches for their careers, and he helped a lot of players too. And you know, hopefully one day he gets his due and gets in the Hall of Fame.
Chatting with Rebels head coach Mark Hapscheid about his time with Canada's national team in the 1988 Olympics that were played in Calgary. You talked about your situation, but you look at the roster from that club, and there's a lot of familiar names on that roster, including guys that were in the Battle of Alberta, like Andy Moog and Jim Plopinski. And were those guys a lot similar in situation to you? And is that how that roster kind of came together?
Well, that was an interesting kind of story was, you know, that there was all of us that, and there was some guys that had committed 4 years to this program. And that was kind of, that was an awkward situation for both of us, or for a lot of players and stuff. But there was some people inside, without me getting into it, because I wasn't a part of those conversations. But, you know, that's when professionals, were they going to be allowed or not? And there were some guys that had played 4 years. And then we had guys come in at the last minute, and guys that had played 4 years lost their spot to these guys. And that was tough because, you know, they played for nothing and gave 4 years of their life. And then the day we go for accreditation, the rug got kind of pulled out on them, and other guys came in that, you know, people kind of knew, and it wasn't their fault. They wanted to play in the Olympics and they were offered the opportunity. But, you know, that was difficult for a lot of guys because we had a really close-knit team at that time, and we did a lot of cool things. You know, we had played in the Izvestia, and Eric Duhatchuk, who you might know,
yep.
he he was kind of a rookie reporter, and he got stuck with covering us for a couple of years. And he always says it's the greatest Canadian win that nobody knows about. And it was a bunch of, and I take that into my coaching career, because it was a bunch of us that in 1987 we weren't good enough to play in the NHL, and we played that Soviet team that Mary Lemieux scored the winning goal against, and Brent, you know, played on that team. And then there was us that, you know, we were just a bunch of Kassoff that weren't good enough to play in the NHL, but we were a good team. We were a good team. We worked together and we cared, and we had a good coach in Dave King. And we went in to play that Soviet team in Moscow in 1987 and beat them. And like Eric said, that was probably the greatest Canadian win that no one knows about. And that was the first team that had won in Moscow against the Soviets since Paul Henderson. And so we were pretty proud of that, to do that. And then everyone thought it was a fluke. And then pre-competition Olympic, we played in Saskatoon. We beat them again 2-1. Mm. So now we had the kiss of death that Sports Illustrated had us as the favorites going into the Olympics. And, you know, we just weren't. And then we lost, came fourth in the Olympics. But, you know, our team changed a little bit. And so it was a unique experience for sure.
Yeah. Tell us about the actual tournament you mentioned there. Canada coming within a goal of getting onto the podium, finishing fourth overall. But what stands out to you overall from the Olympic tournament itself?
Well, it's the Olympics. I mean, I can still remember walking into the tournament. My parents were up there. I mean, we were an immigrant family, didn't have a lot except each other. And, you know, I remember walking into the home of the Stampeders. It should have been home of the Riders, but it was home of the Stampeders.
Hey, that torch is still proudly on display at McMahon, Olympic flame, yeah.
And we went there, and I still can remember going in with all the athletes and looking up and seeing my parents up there. And that was pretty special, and to be a part of the Olympics. And then that was the year of Eddie the Eagle and lots of things going on. And to be in the Saddle Dome, people may not remember, but the Saddle Dome actually was made into Olympic size. So they widened the boards and they had the three levels, and the rink was built for those Olympics. So it was brand new at that time, and it was a mausoleum, so to speak. And we went in there, and it was unique because, you know, it wasn't the Flames versus the Oilers. It was Canada versus Poland in game one, and the Soviets and the Swedes and so on. So it was a different vibe, and just to play in the Olympics at home was pretty special. And at the time, you know, you realize that it was pretty special, but looking back on it, you know, I still have the clothing for the opening ceremonies, and the friendships of those guys that were on that team remain forever.
So you got that Western-style Sun Ice jacket with all the leather tassels on it?
Absolutely,
oh,
I do.
Baby.
And that's, yeah, it's in a box someplace. I don't know where it is. But
those things are highly sought after if you ever need to make a quick buck.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Check it out.
I won't think about that.
Yeah. And the white cowboy hat, too.
And the white cowboy hat, yeah. We were in the stands and with those, and just the whole experience. I mean, and at that time it was kind of unique because it was still amateurs. Mm-hmm. And even though I had played professional before, like, I was an amateur, really. I wasn't good enough playing the NHL at that time. So, you know, came back, and we were all just, you know, we were playing for the country, but I think we made, you know, a stipend of $10,000 or something to do this. But just the whole experience of the Olympics, but not only the Olympics, because we were a traveling team, so we got the opportunity to play behind the Iron Curtain, go to Moscow, be in the Soviet Union, be in East Germany, East Berlin, go to Poland. And Dave King was really good, and I think I tried to bring that with me for coaching, that it wasn't just the hockey, it was learning as people. And I mean, in East Germany we would always go for tours, and we'd go to, like, in Poland, we went to Auschwitz, and we went to Moscow, and we toured the Red Square, and we were always doing something, and I think that had a big effect on why we were such a close-knit team.
Yeah, and that was kind of an interesting time, because it really was the end of an era, because by the time the 1992 Olympics hit, the Iron Curtain had come down, and the Soviet Union was no longer, so you guys were right at the end of that Cold War era, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's what I think, for me, that whole experience is so special, because you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because you never can do it anymore, and I was really, really lucky to be able to experience that, going into the Soviet Union, going into Luzhniki against, and looking across and seeing CCCP, And I remember us winning, winning against the Soviets 2-3-2 in Luzhniki. And they were very upset, And they had five players on the All-Star team. We had one, our goalie, Sean Burke. And in the end, you know, we won the tournament, but they played the Soviet Soviet national anthem instead of "O Canada." So it was big. It was fun. We went to the embassy. We did a lot of fun things together. And I, like I said, the most memorable thing is that can never be done again. And it was pretty special.
Pretty remarkable stuff for sure. So fast forward all the way to 2006, you get to rejoin the Olympic program, but this time as an assistant coach. Now, obviously, things didn't go well on the ice in terms of the final result for Team Canada, but being that the Olympics are back in Italy as we speak, what stands out from your experience there?
Well, I was full-time Hockey Canada after Kelowna. I went there and did a couple world championships and a lot of smaller tournaments too. And then I was assistant coach for that team. I did a lot of, because I was full-time in Hockey Canada, I did a lot of the, pre-comp work. And at that time, I wasn't sure whether professionals were going to go to the Olympics. And if they did, I was going to be an assistant. And if they didn't, then I was going to be the head coach of guys that were non-professionals. So that was kind of how my job got created. And professionals did go, so I was an assistant coach. And it was fun because I got to work with some good coaches, obviously some pretty good management at that time, and good players. And one really special person, Pat Quinn. He was just a gentleman and a really learned a lot from him, just the presence he had. And he's a big man, but I don't think you'll find a more kind person and a better guy to work with. And it was a lot of fun. The tournament obviously didn't go in the way we wanted, but it was interesting for me personally because I had played in the Olympics as a player and now I went back as a coach, and just to go through it again. And now I had a family to take the kids around, and my kids were of an age where they still remember. And my daughter was telling me some stories just last year. I had no idea about even Walter Gretzky, about how kind he was to her, and little things like that. And like I said, I'm very, 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 very fortunate to have had those experiences, and they're pretty special.
That's pretty remarkable. As far as I can remember, Pat Quinn had the biggest hand I've ever had a handshake with in my life. Like, true definition of gentle giant when he was off the ice.
Yeah, he was, but he was Irish too, Yeah. He liked his cigars and he liked his red wine. And I can remember one time Andy, who I'd played in Edmonton with, Andy Moog, Pat was very superstitious. So Pat had, and it was double mint spearmint gum, and he had three pieces, one for every period, and he had them laid out, and the trainer had to lay him out on the table. And Pat was very, very kind man, but he was Irish, had a little bit of a temper, and he liked things done a certain way. So Andy saw this gum and he went to grab it, and Pat almost broke his wrist because he slammed me. He says, "Don't you touch them." And Andy was like, "What? It's just gum." But that was Pat's superstition, and he didn't want his gum touched. So yeah, he was just a prince of a man. He was even the year before, in the lockout year, I was fortunate enough to coach that team. And here I was just out of junior, and I'm coaching basically, the Olympic team. And I just thought it was proper that, Pat was going to coach the Olympic team the next year. And I just thought it was proper that, I defer to Pat. And I had talked to Pat and said, Pat, I appreciate it, but I'm just a young guy, a junior coach, and this is a big tournament and a big team, and I have no problem stepping aside if you want to coach. It's your team. And he said, "Nope." He said, "That's your team, and you've earned the right." And so I will always be grateful to him, because he could absolutely said, "Yeah, for sure, I'm coaching," but he gave the opportunity to me, and I'll ever be grateful for him for doing that.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Just one last one for you. How excited do you get nowadays during Olympic time? Do you make time to sit and watch hockey and the other events? Do you still get a little bit of a buzz when Olympic time comes around?
It's the Olympics, and I think I just have more of an appreciation. But it's funny, when I watch the hockey or the other events, I relate to my experience as a player or as a coach and to what they're going through, even, you know, the pre-tournament practices and how they're closed and the meetings and how it all works for picking the players. Well, I was part of that, so yeah. I can kind of laugh about it and, you know, think about what's happening behind closed doors and what, you know, what goes on, because I was there both as a player and as a coach. And like I said, I'm very fortunate, very grateful to have that experience. And those are things that I'll keep with me.
Very grateful that you made some time to share some stories. Happy thanks for this. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Anytime. Thanks.